Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, our guest today on the Not Old Better Show is writer, educator, blogger, and mentor, Katherine Johnson. Katherine is well known for so many things, most definitely her own writing, which we'll touch on today, but more so her teaching, mentoring, and helping other writers write, which is the subject of our conversation today on the Not Old Better Show. Katherine is teaching the day-long course from Smithsonian Associates, Write a Novel in a Month, on October 29th at the Ripley Center. You can register for the course on our website. You can find it at smithsonianassociates.org. But here's a little bit of background about Katherine. She teaches at the Writer Center in Bethesda, Maryland, and she is the author of more than 40 published novels. You can learn this and more at her website, writebyyou.com, which we'll have a link on our site for. But this is going to be a fabulous program, one that's very personally interesting to me. So register, bring your pad and pen or a fully charged laptop, and get ready to write your novel. Because November is Write a Novel Month. Again, Katherine will be at Smithsonian Associates October 29th, and November is Write a Novel Month. So my math tells me, based on the average novel size of about 50,000 words, that we're going to be writing about 1,600 words a day. So get ready. Let's learn from Katherine. Please join me in welcoming Katherine Johnson to the show. Well, welcome, Katherine Johnson, via Skype. And Katherine, of course, I want to tell you what a privilege it is to talk to you. And I'm looking forward to that. But first, let me tell you that my mother is a writer, and she is still active at age 85. She recently won a poetry writing contest. She's very active in the National League of American Pen Women. She had a longtime byline for the McClatchy newspapers chain in California. She was an English teacher as I was growing up. And so, knowing common misspellings and kind of the difference maybe between lay and lie, while all of that is important, it's probably not the most crucial element of writing. And so for my audience, writing is something all of us can do until very late in life, and there's no sense in not starting, right? I know you agree with all of it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, one of the things, as soon as you told me that about your mom, I started thinking about my grandmother. She was a farmer's wife in Vermont, and until she passed, we didn't know she was a closet poet. but we found her poems when we went up through the house, and then I ended up, to honor her, I took her name as one of my pen names, Mary Hart Perry.
Oh.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
That's
wonderful, and it's very true. You can write forever. It's one of those wonderful, rare things that age does not hamper in the least. It doesn't hamper our doing it. It doesn't change our ability to be published or to self-publish ourselves or just to write for our family or any sort of writing. It's wonderful to be able to do.
Well, that's a wonderful story about your grandmother. And one of my questions, of course, was going to be on that on your pen name and your nom de plume. And so that's a wonderful mm-hmm. story. But I think all of us, or many of us, have these stories and can tell them and probably need to for the purposes of our own family history and even the kind of sharing amongst close friends and family. It doesn't necessarily have to be for a national or international audience, right?
No, absolutely. I've been working with, because I sometimes edit other people's work and mentor other writers. So one of the things that I've been working on with a couple of people are memoirs of time in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. Another of my wonderful writers, he's honoring his father's memory by writing about his father's participation in the continent in World War II. And these are basically for family, friends, but they also consider going ahead and getting them officially published on their own, so that then other people who ask for their books can get them also. So there's a lot of things that you can do with your writing.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to kind of get published today. We'll touch maybe a little bit on the electronic side of things, but I'd like to go back just a little bit kind of to the beginning maybe, and maybe even offer this quote. I really liked this quote from Dorothy Parker, the writer and the poet, and she was always known as being very witty, and she said, I hate writing, but I love having written. So tell us about your own experiences with writing, and whether there you had any early stops and starts and any moments of reflection on your own when you just looked up and said, this is overwhelming, and how did you overcome some of these challenges that, you know, often writers face?
Oh, well, this is a great question. I have to disagree with Dorothy on this, though. I enjoy the process. I like having written things and seeing them done, finished, and have a complete story. But I also love very much the process of writing. I think it's a wonderful way to exercise the mind, to stretch your mind, and to reach out and to discover all sorts of other information and other worlds even. Because when we're writing, oftentimes we're also needing to look things up and discover things and to provide details that things that we might have forgotten or never knew, and they belong in that story. So we have to go and broaden our horizons. So that's a lot of, you know, what I enjoy. I love doing that. As far as the sorts of things that stand in our way of writing, they're always going to be there. And one of the things that a lot of my students say that is a problem, a challenge for them, is ignoring the voices. And I speak of the voices when I'm teaching, is these are the sorts of things that we think to ourselves. We think to ourselves, oh my gosh, there are so many stories out there, there are so many books, nobody's going to want to hear mine. Or we think in terms of, well, I'll never be a good enough writer to really shine and to write the way I want to write. And one of the things that we really work hard on in the Smithsonian course, as well as the other courses that I teach at the Writers' Center in Bethesda, is that we have to ignore these voices, because they're only harming us, they're stopping us from doing what we love, and the way to get around those voices is to simply write, to delve into the writing, to just completely submerge ourselves in our project, and then the voices go away, and we stop doubting ourselves.
That's interesting. That's a really kind of that's a great tip, and I'm sure there are going to be more of those kind of tips offered by Katherine Johnson. We're with Katherine Johnson today. Katherine is a writer, a teacher, a speaker, a motivator. As you just heard, Katherine also is a mentor. Katherine, some of the quotes that I've read about you say that you are fun, hip, and passionate, and I thought that was really, that's a wonderful thing to say about somebody. And they also have said that you're one of the most exciting speakers that many have heard, and Katherine will be appearing at the Smithsonian Ripley Center October 29th, 2016, from 9:30 in the morning until 4 p.m., teaching us to write a novel a month. And you just have so much energy and enthusiasm and commitment. You also were called one of the great writers evangelists. So I think that it's going to be wonderful to have you at the Smithsonian and talk about this process that you just alluded to. And so I want to kind of touch on that for just a second and tell us a little bit about this idea of process and particularly research that you do. It seems like research and writing go hand in hand, maybe more than ever before. You know, we're reading books that are just so heavily researched and deeply researched. And tell us a little bit about what you talk about in the course with regard to research, and what kind of research do you do, even you personally do, before writing?
Right. Okay. So one of the things that one of the types of books that I love to write are historical novels. I love to write history in a form that's entertaining. And people love to read historical fiction because it's a painless way to learn. Mm-hmm. We learn facts. We learn about the way people lived in a certain era, the way they dressed, their concerns in life, and how they made a living, and so many things can come out of historical fiction. So when we start working on, for instance, a book of that sort, several of my books were set in the Victorian era in England and based on Queen Victoria's daughters and their lives. And one of the things that you have to do is, of course, you have to do a certain amount of research in order to know your story, to learn your story, to find it, and then start working on it. So I tell my students that really you should only do as much research as you need in order to get started and get writing on your project. Because otherwise what happens is we take the easy road, which is the research. Reading other people's material is easier than writing. So we tend to stretch out the research, and then 3, 4, 10 years later, we're still telling ourselves, well, I still need to do more research here. But we need to find that stopping point to just research enough so that we can use what we've learned in our story and get going on it. And then if we get into the middle and we actually need to have to find out more facts, we find there are some gaps in our knowledge, then I encourage my students simply to stop at that point and write themselves a note, something that says, for instance, I need to look up this street in London and see if it goes from the church to the Thames River. Hmm. Or some detail. You know, you're leaving yourself a little breadcrumb trail so that you can go back and remember that, yes, I need to look this up. But we don't want to stop and research it now in the middle of the writing process, because if we do, it may just halt us entirely. It distracts us, and we don't finish writing the story itself.
I love that. I think that's a wonderful point to make, that the research can come to a kind of a natural conclusion. It can then be picked up again, and it can be offered as an enhancement, but it's often maybe the easier road to go down, and it can be distracting too. And I think that's an important point to make, that you're balancing some things when you're writing.
Yes, absolutely. Writing stories of any kind, whether they're based on real events and real people on your own life or on somebody else's life or just made up out of thin air. It's all about balancing things, but it's all about, you know, it is a series of questions that we're asking ourselves when we're writing any sort of story. We hear ourselves thinking these questions about, you know, well, what would this character do in this circumstance? Or I wonder what the weather would be like in that part of the world at this time of the year. Or, you know, these questions are constant. And our job as the author is to, yes, hear the question and then answer it the best we can. It can be based on research or our own knowledge or something we just make up, actually, because in fiction, we're allowed to lie. I mean, we are. We make things up. So answering questions, and it doesn't matter. The thing is, it doesn't matter what you answer. No, there's no right answer to any of the questions that you have to answer as you're plotting your book or your story and moving forward. It's all up to you, because this is your creation. And it's a wonderful freeing thing to realize that. This is mine. This is my creation. This is my world that I'm making here.
I personally enjoy historical fiction too. I think it's interesting to see that, in fact, Sherlock Holmes, and Arthur Conan Doyle's work is really undergoing a serious revival, and it's almost it the BBC series on television is kind of bringing it current. And so there are lots of ways to take characters that, in your imagination might have existed at one point in time, but might even be brought to a more current state in a period too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We see this all the time. And, well, you can be as creative as you want when you're writing a story, when you're writing fiction. Gee, there was a book not too long, several years ago, and it was during the phase where there were so many vampire stories out there, which were fun, but there were so many out there, and they started to get feel similar. And then this one author, and I cannot remember the author's name, I'm sorry, but the title of the book was Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Killer. I mean, well, of course, Abraham Lincoln never, this is not real, but it was fun, and a lot of people really enjoyed it. Apparently, it sold well.
Well, again, we are with Katherine Johnson, who is a writer, 40 novels to her credit. Wonderful enthusiasm and energy. Again, Katherine will be at the Smithsonian Associates Program October 29th at the Ripley Center. We'll have links to all of your work, Catherine, your website, links to where people can go to register for the class. But it's perfect timing because October 29th is your class, then November actually is the National Novel Writing Month. And so can you tell a little bit about what the writing month of November is all about, and are you going to kind of tie that together in your class and get everybody on kind of that timeline?
Right. Yeah, the purpose of having the class right before we dive into National Novel Writing Month is for people to be able to understand a little bit about how it works. But basically to prepare themselves, because it works best if you launch yourself into it with some idea of what you want your story to be about, and a little bit about your characters, and how do I actually plot a book, a story, and many of the questions that people have that are very basic about writing fiction. So the course itself at the Smithsonian is to prepare people for the month and to give them a lot of just useful practical information about how one goes about writing a novel. And then in November, National Novel Writing Month, they can go to NaNoWriMo.org, and I know you'll have that link there at the end. But what it does, what they're doing is they're bringing together all over the world professional and amateur writers, and they are letting you sign up, you register for it. And then you're saying, I'm going to commit myself to doing this. I'm going to write my book this month. And the goal is, the ultimate goal is to write a draft, a rough draft of 50,000 word novel in a month. And it's fun. It's sort of seat of your pants writing. It's very creative. They have various supports on their website that you can click into. Gee, they have all sorts of wonderful stuff like T-shirts and mugs and things like that that you can get. And it's several, I know a lot of writers who do it every year religiously. Every year they sign up and do this. And it's a wonderful way just to get your story down on paper. This is not pretty writing. This is not polished. It's not a finished product by any means. But what it is it's a way to get the writing started and get it down and capture your story.
That's great. And yes, we will put a link up to NaNoWriMo.org. I like that website too.
Yes.
And I think one of the things that I think is always really important to point out about the Smithsonian Associates programs and your class is a good representation of that, in that some people might view writing as being kind of a solitary activity, and probably the writing part is, but you really treat it as though it's, and your class is very collegial, but even after that day of the class, you have an ongoing mentor relationship. You also do work at the Writers Center. This becomes kind of a community. The website can kind of offer a little bit of a community. So it's really a good way to develop some nice contacts and maybe even some support around ongoing writing.
Yes, absolutely. We do have anybody who takes the course at the Smithsonian can sign up. There's a Smithsonian Writers Group and we give the instructions to the people who, you know, sign up and all, but it's a closed group for just the people who are in that group, and it's a Yahoo group, you mm-hmm, know, where mm-hmm. you know, you'd have to send to me, say, I want mm-hmm. to subscribe, and will you let me in, type mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
And so that works very well for people who take that. But anytime you take a writing course, whether it's at the Smithsonian or any course anywhere, you're going to be among other writers. And it's a wonderful opportunity to get to know them and what they're writing, and they'll want to know about your project. And oftentimes people who take my classes at various places will come back to me and say, oh, you know the class I took 2 years ago from you, for you? We got together, a bunch of us, four of us are still together, and we're still comparing manuscripts and helping each other along and providing emotional support mm-hmm. For each other as we, you know, continue working on our writing. So that's a wonderful thing. And then in this area of the country, as well as others, I'm sure, there are a lot of meetup groups of writers now that are happening. And I'm not involved in those, but I hear some good things about some of those meetup groups where writers are getting together. And it may be just for socializing and support, you know, as they're going through working on their manuscripts, just to have somebody to talk to about that. And it's easier to talk to other writers about what you're doing. People who don't write oftentimes don't understand the charm of it and the love that we have for our writing. Hmm. So there's lots of ways to support your writing through taking courses, through meeting up with other writers, through critique groups. And if you can't find a critique group in your area, by meeting other writers, you can start one and have that sort of support. A lot of professional writers right now have close groups of friends who are writers, and they go to each other for readings of their manuscripts, critical readings, to help them improve their manuscripts and get the book to be the best it can be.
That's fascinating. Well, as a professional writer yourself, talk a little bit to us about kind of this very, I think sometimes it's even misunderstood, this idea of a pen name and what these kind of various identities offer and the kind of the different roles that they play in your writing.
Oh, okay. So one of the things that, one of the reasons for a pen name isn't because I want to hide from anybody. it's simply because when you're writing a certain type of story, then your readers become familiar with your name and connect it with that type of story. So they tend to look for your books under that name and expect it to be a particular genre or flavor of book. And so when I'm writing historical fiction, most of my current historical fiction now, I'm writing as Mary Hart Perry, which is my grandmother's name, as I said before. And then I'm writing my contemporary fiction, under my own name, Katherine Johnson. That enables my readers to differentiate between the two, so they're not going to be disappointed if they pick up one under a name and it's something that they don't expect. But it's not necessary. There are some writers who just write everything that they write under one name, and they feel fine with that. That works for them. A pen name, too, is helpful for people who are in certain professions. For instance, I've known people who are in a legal or medical profession, and they're writing fiction of a sort. Maybe they're writing espionage fiction or mysteries or something that has nothing to do with their profession, but they really want to keep those lives separate, so they come up with a pen name. And in some cases, for instance, if you're working for the government, perhaps in certain capacities, you don't necessarily want your professional name on your stories, your manuscripts. So there are very various reasons. I did have a friend who used to live in a part of the world. She lived in Egypt, and her writing was she absolutely had to have her writing under another name and not have it known that she was writing, because it was dangerous for her there. Mm. She just couldn't do that. She was putting herself and her family in danger. And since then, she's no longer living there, but still, it was necessary.
Well, thanks. I think that is important to point out to budding writers and to all of us that really are curious about what that really does represent and how and what it's really kind of used for. You mentioned Egypt, and so. Mm-hmm. I'm always curious when I talk to authors and writers what they're working on next. And I read that you returned from a trip to Egypt where you collected some vivid details for a new novel. You've got that. Is that kind of in the works, coming up for you next?
That one is always in the works. I still haven't figured out how to use that. I really want to use that. I love the antiquities, the place itself, and I was just glad that I got to visit there. It was some years ago before it became a little bit trickier to travel in that country. But, one of these days, absolutely, I'm going to use that information. But right now what I'm working on, I do have, I just finished a historical novel, which is going to be a murder mystery set, basically, most of it will be set in London. And that's very exciting for me. I really love mysteries, and I love the history, so it's a good blend for me. And my heroine's an American, and my hero is a Brit. So we'll see if they get together. And the work that I'm doing right now is a psychological thriller, a contemporary psychological thriller. And it will be set in, I can't say exactly where, but in this general area. And that's very much the work in progress. I'm really just at first draft phase in that myself.
Well, I can tell with your work at the Smithsonian and your writing that we are going to have you back. We'll definitely have you back and talk about all this. But, Katherine, what a pleasure it's been to talk to you again. Katherine Johnson is a well-known writer, published 40 books, and is going to be at the Smithsonian Ripley Center, October 29th. We will have links on where and when to get your registration in place and enjoy this fabulous program from Katherine. There are so many positive comments that we just have run out of time to pay to you, but we'll put those up on our site too. And Katherine, thanks so much for your time. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I just would like to add that I think anybody who wants to write can write, and it's really a learning process. And I've had so many of my students who have come back to me and said, you know, they're thrilled now their book is out, now they have an agent, or now they've just been able to deliver their story to their children that they worked so hard on, And it's just thrilling to see. It's really a learning process, but you have to believe in yourself and just persist, and you'll get it done. And there's nothing more gratifying, nothing more gratifying.
That's wonderful. And I think I really liked your advice about getting started with this, that's an important element, that's a natural first step, but it's often a pretty simple one, is just to get started. Get that pen, get that pad, do a little writing.
That's right, exactly.
Well, bring that pad and bring that pen to the Ripley Center on October 29th for Katherine Johnson's Write a Novel a Month program. Katherine, again, thank you so much for joining us. And I promise you, we're going to follow up with you.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul. I really enjoyed it.
I have as well. Thanks, Katherine. Talk to you soon.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to all my guests today, all the help on the podcast, and especially to Media Studio Edit and the great work by Wayne Brown and his team for editing the podcast and making me sound so much better. That is to say, not old, but better. Thanks to all.